Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively back from a European vacation. I probably should have watched the Chevy Chase version of that before I went over there. I haven't seen that one since I first went to Europe 25 years ago. But I spent a beautiful week over in Europe, talked a lot of World Cup. Obviously, that dream is now extinguished for 2026 for Baltimore and Washington. I'll be talking at length about that. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour as well. We're going to be with the mayor of Baltimore on Monday at Next Phase Cafe. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our partners at Goodwill Industries, as well as Window Nation, where this month you buy two, you get two free. Such a good deal that I took advantage of it. You know what a cheapskate I am. Folks at Window Nation take great care of me. I know they'll take great care of you as well. And we're going to be on Wednesday at Fadley's in the morning as well at Lexington Market, the old Lexington Market, as opposed to the new Lexington Market, which I toured as part of homecoming a couple of months ago. Luke spends as much time downtown as anybody, going to Orioles games now. And Luke, I was headed to Dulles Airport. I was in the car. I packed up. We did 6 days in Europe. So, it takes a day to get there and a day to get back. So it's sort of 5 days. We spent 2 days in Cologne drinking Kolsch with your buddy Niels and family and friends. And Lynn says hello as well from Barcelona. And then we made our way up to Amsterdam, where Mick Jagger got COVID 2 hours before a Rolling Stones concert. There was great sports involved because JT the Brick and I tore up the Prinsengracht, the Herengracht, the single. We did it all in Amsterdam, including the Heineken, which was very unfortunate. Heineken, you still suck, by the way. Amsterdam, good. Tulips, good. Heineken, no good. The Anne Frank Museum, unbelievable experience. But Luke, the whole trip started not just with me with a bad back, but with me being in the car and my wife driving, and I got somewhere around Burtonsville, and I saw the Justin Fenton, little shout out to the Baltimore Banner. They're going to be our guest at Sláinte on Friday. Kimmy Yoshino and MTS Patel, the editor and publisher. So we're going to be talking about journalism and Fenton and We Own This City and all this other stuff. And the Angelos boys are at war in a court of law with allegations so intensely personal, stuff that they would have, that I knew 80% of that document, maybe 90%. I know a lot about the Angelos boys from people who talk to me. And I don't know whether to believe some of it. I don't know those kids at all. I call them kids. They're older than me. I don't know them. They've never opened themselves up to know. Most people don't know them. They know of them or from high school or whatever. They travel in small circles. This is, you and I haven't talked about it, and we've had a week to think about it, because this literally happened as I was leaving for Europe. It was sort of the chef's kiss from the Angelos family as I was flying to Ireland, of all places, and I needed some Guinness for that. Luke, you've been reading up, and your opinions on this. Sometimes we differ on all this. You're down there because they allow you to go. They don't allow me to go, sort of famously, and I still don't know why. So I don't have a credential. I don't talk to them. But man, do people talk to me about them? And most of the stuff in here, it's no secret that John didn't get along with his father. It's no secret that he's gone. It's no secret that he's wearing his cowboy boots. This young lady who's a musical art. I mean, dude, it read like something Rick Mace would have written about them 15 years ago in an expose that they would have, like Daniel Snyder would have gotten sued, right? Like in that Washington City paper. It's unbelievable how tawdry this whole thing is, how you need to hold your nose and get a tissue.
Yeah. I mean, it's all in drama. I would remind everyone that a lawsuit that comes from one perspective, you can have the kitchen sink thrown at you, and some of it can be true. Some of it's completely false. Some of it's half truth and you're kind of wondering, but it's a lot of drama. Everything you just mentioned as far as what is known about the family, and you have a case which is not uncommon, and I can't speak that I have a great knowledge of this because I don't have a legal background or anything of that nature, but family members fighting over inheritance and trust and assets and real estate. And in this case, a Major League Baseball franchise. It's not stunning that there's conflict. Certainly when you see details in a lawsuit, which again, it's Lou Angelos's perspective and what the truth is compared to that, who knows? I mean, I think what's weird, not weird because I'm not shocked by it, but I think what my big takeaway here is it was interesting to see because this is a sports story, although it's more than just that, much more than just that. And you're talking about family drama here and that part of it's sad, you know, when you really think about it, but you know, from a sports perspective, we're so used to rooting for one side or the other, pitting one side against the other. And I don't know what to believe here.
Am I on Team Lou or Team John?
Yeah, I mean, right. And that just feels weird to me. And that feels very premature until we, you know, hear any semblance of, you know, this thing going to court or any other details that come out about it. I mean, we've heard statements from John Angelos and you know, the Angelos, you know, George Angelos and you know, statements are what they are. I mean, it's controlled. It's lawyer driven. It's very careful in how it's worded, all of that. So, you know, I don't know what you take away from that, but, you know, I think for me to provide a little bit of, you know, not to make light of the situation, because it's a very serious situation, you know, on a lot of levels, especially as it pertains to the Orioles and their future here in Baltimore. You know, I come back to a pro wrestling example and I think back to 20 years ago and not to make light of Vince McMahon because he's got some things going on in the news right now that we won't get into at the moment, but check it out. It's quite frankly, it's ugly, but from a kayfabe standpoint, years ago, there was Vince McMahon, his wife, Linda, Stephanie and Shane, the two kids, and they were feuding at one point and it was a McMahon in each corner, so to speak. And they had, you know, this whole thing going on. And I just remember at the time thinking, I don't want to root for any of these people. And that's what this kind of feels like for me. And, you know, this is where I just come back to looking at it from, you know, from a legal perspective, this is way above my pay grade to really know how this is going to shake out. So I'm not going to pretend to have that kind of expertise. But looking at this from a perspective of caring about the Orioles, caring about the city, wanting the Orioles to not just continue to be here. And I'm still not that concerned about a relocation for a variety of reasons, but I am concerned about the long-term well-being and health of the franchise here in Baltimore to be viable and successful. That I have plenty of concern
I'm
about.
I'm worried about moving them is one thing. I'm worried about them staying in this circumstance
and being successful, right?
Because this is worthless. I mean, sure. I mean seriously, the last 5 years, if we're going to play this game again and these guys are going to go to war and Major League Baseball is just going to step back and let the – I mean, how much – the next step down is Montreal or Oakland where there are 1,800 people. And there will be nights in September where I'm guessing there's going to be 2,200 people at the ball. I guess. I don't know. You're out there more than me. Nobody goes, man. It's and they blame it on the dirt bikes, the square, like all of these issues that are also issues. But who's going to be the genius? I keep going back to this. There needs to be somebody really good, really front-facing, really welcoming, really warm, really vested in inviting people like me back. Because if you don't want me back, who do you want? I'm 53 years old. I have enough money that I can go. My last name's Aparicio. Who are you trying to recruit at this point? Who is going to be in that stadium? And what is going to make that happen beyond, well, we have a baseball player. We're just going to throw Adley Rutschman. The business is more complicated than that when it comes to selling skyboxes and suites and media and being nice and all the things that the Ravens try like hell to do. And fight to do in a diminished market here in Baltimore, which it is.
Yeah. And I'll continue to go back to the talking point that I always bring up at this point. Winning is paramount. You can have the best people. And if your product stinks, and it stunk for the last 5 or 6 years, specifically as it pertains to the end of the Duquette Showalter era until now. And yes, they're a little bit better, but they're still not very good. And they still have a ways to go. But what you just said, I'll completely agree with. As they are now approaching this point where you are seeing some progress on the field, you're seeing Adley Rutschman and you're seeing other guys be called up. And we've already seen Mullins and Mountcastle and Hayes and go down the list of guys that are playing and succeeding at the major league level and looking at some of the prospects they have at AAA. They're at the point now where you're hoping that that winning is coming and the light is at the end of the tunnel. And that's what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com. As they're reaching this point where it feels like this coming off season, even though I would have started some of this past off season, but I digress on that. And we've talked about that already. But this off season in particular feels like the time where, I'm not saying you take the payroll up to $160 million overnight, but this feels like the time where you start bringing in and augmenting the current core of young players with real established, viable veteran talent, whether it's via trade, whether it's signing free agents and paying them real money. So on the heels of thinking back to a decade ago, when we were talking in terms of Dan Duquette and how much the Masson dispute and ownership is holding up potentially spending money on baseball players. And look, we're talking a decade now. And that's, by the way, that's still not solved. So you have the Masson dispute. And now
I did
you have
a piece last week on that, by the way, yeah, the Washington Post, because yeah, it's fouling up two franchises now.
Right.
And Manfred feels impotent. It just feels impotent. Feels like Bowie Kuhn would have been up here, you know, 5 minutes and said, we're going to sit down and figure this out. They've never been able to do this with Angelos, which is why they never wanted him in the party in 1993. Now all the cast has changed, and this is what we're left with to run the place. Who's running the place? That like, literally, who wakes up every day and tries to fix the PR, tries to figure out what to do with this $1.2 billion they're crowing about? Where are the plans? Where are the blueprints? Where is the front facing for the organization? Where is your plan to help the city heal and get better and be a civic leader? And I'm going to believe me, Bisciotti's going to hear from me as well. So, and on behalf of Cole Roofing, because I'm holding this mug up, Steve Bisciotti's going to hear about this too, because the city's decay and leadership and what built this city back when I was a kid was about civic leadership. And, you know, what's the phrase? Too much is given, much is expected, or right, or like whatever that one is.
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles have done pretty well. The young men that were born on third and think they hit a double, they're going to make a lot of money, these kids. Even fighting and wherever this thing goes, and they hate each other, and they'll probably hate each other the rest of their lives. Their mother's getting older. The third fax that John wrote for his mother. Oh my God. Wow. Was that a doozy? So if I'm on team Lou or team John, I'm trying to read it down the middle. And all I can say about it is Lou makes a fair point. You know what I mean? Like, as this thing goes on. So that's where I am on this. Lou makes a fair point. So let's peel back the onion, and on behalf of the city, the people, we're giving them a billion two to fix their stadium so that they can sell the franchise for $4 billion 20 years from now instead of two now. I mean, Bisciotti famously got up without socks and said, I take a $1 million salary. We all went, oh, well, you know, that's cool. I mean, you own the team. That's good. And then you wake up 15 years later and you realize, oh, you bought it for $600 billion and it's worth $4
billion. Right.
$600 million, it's worth $4 billion now. And I'm like, that's 34 more hundred millions that you've made. That's 34 more hundred millions you've made. So you've made $100 million for 34 years, except you've only owned the team for 20 with a piece, maybe 17, right? So 17 years you've owned the team, that's $200 million into 34. So you're making $200 million a year on asset. You've got a tax shelter, and you spend 10 days a year in Baltimore, and we didn't get the World Cup, and nobody said a word. And that's unfortunate, man. That's really unfortunate. And you start to see these institutions with these incredible legs into the community with things like stadia, tax breaks, asset appreciation through the roof, media assets, throwing the media out, holding their nose at me and saying, I'm not a real media member now, which three different franchises in this city have said to me over the course of time. Stuff that's just like dumb. And The Orioles thing, watching the decay of this and being on the tarmac literally at Dulles Airport reading this, it's just so unbecoming of humans that you wonder who these people are and why it's as effed up as it is. And it's because this is the best these people can do. This is the best John Angelos can do. This is the best. They're giving their best for 30 effing years. This is what they are. An empty stadium, an empty soul, a bunch of pissed off, disgruntled people like me that have been kicked around for so long that I don't know anything else. I don't know anything from Greg Bader other than being mistreated. That's all I know. Literally. I've never mistreated them. I've told the truth. The truth is not mistreatment. And if I'd ever lied about them, they'd have sued me. So, you know, and now all of this is out in a document that the kid's trying to move the team to Nashville. The brother's accusing him of that. And
he speculates about the possibility. He doesn't flat out say he's trying to move
trying to maximize the value of the team. Luke, come on now, right? Can we just call a carrot a carrot?
Okay, but come on now. You read the lawsuit, and he offers nothing beyond two speculative mentions of it. And look, he might be, but
lives there, and they want a franchise, and they have a stadium.
Steve Bisciotti has a home in Florida. He's not trying to move the Ravens to Florida. Like I hear what you're saying, but let's be factual though too. He doesn't flat out say he's trying to move the team to Nashville. He mentions the possibility of it, and it's speculative, and there's no substance whatsoever.
John Angelos is never going to make his home in Baltimore again, obviously, right? Neither is Steve, right? So, like, these ownership people who were living in Ruxton, invested in the community, invested in a brewery, all that stuff that Angelos talked about when he didn't want Bill DeWitt, you know, owning the team and Larry running it, which – I mean, it's just unbelievable. Even in the lawsuits, they bring all of this revisionist history up about stuff. And I remember going onto the website 15 years ago, onto Angelos' website, and he made a corporate video that looked like it was right out of my UB class in 1988, including the Chiron. It looked a little like Masson. And he said, the overlay said, saving the Orioles for Baltimore. Like, the bullshit that has been spewed out. I mean, the stadium was built. Camden Yards was there.
There was already a 30-year lease in place at that point when he bought the franchise.
It's just like that is just a lie. I mean, it's right out of the Trump handbook. And we're just going to make it up and we're going to make it stick and you're going to believe it. And so part of the thing in that document was, and this is coming from me, right? Okay, so I'm Mr. Anti and all that, right? I'm Mr. Truth Teller. I knew so much of it, and not much of it was surprising. Like John the bar and Dad doesn't like John, and John was in the family, and John was out of the family, and like I know all of that, right? But to put it out there in this sort of book fashion for all of it, I'll say this: there was very little in Lou's document that I dispute. Okay, so like I'm just like literally, he wrote a story in that like you said, it's an allegation, right? Great song, by the way, Hot House Flowers. I'm sorry, there were hints and allegations. So the allegations that he makes, I will literally say this: I've called high holy bullshit on lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of high holy bullshit that they've given over 30, and they lie a lot. Just in general, the reason we don't get people say, why don't you have a press pass, is because I couldn't sit there and have them lie to me any more than I like the Ravens lying to me about what they knew about Ray Rice, because they lied too. So I don't like to be lied to. And Lamar Jackson the other day, two different stories. I don't – that incongruency doesn't add up, and that's my job to disseminate that. I've been doing that since I was a kid. So I looked at the document. I read it once. I read it again in Amsterdam. I read it. I kept reading it. I look at all of it and I say, this is Lou's feelings and the Brady Anderson thing and like all of that.
Yeah, that part of it was.
Okay, but they had a lot of success. In Lou's mind, we had success when Brady Anderson came back to our franchise and was a liaison keeping ownership abreast of what was going on in there, because that's the Angelos way. Now, you can call that dysfunctional. That's fine. But what I'm saying is there's nothing in that document that I felt like was an outrageously, what I felt like was outrageous was John writing a press release for his mother 2 days later. I didn't think it was outrageous that John would have his punch back or whatever, but writing it on behalf of his mother when the whole document accuses him of usurping his mother. And, you know, my mother died a couple of years ago. You lost your father. I mean, that's a family issue, but boy, to bring that out, it really, there was very little in that document that I looked at and said, well, that's an outrageous out, you know, that can't be true. Cause I felt like Lou, as the lawyer and as the one who's been thrown out, reading the tea leaves in that, I read the document and I'm like, wow, you know, wow. I mean, they threw Brady out, and Brady was like a little bit of a family liaison. Now, should he have been working pitchers out in machines and away from, I mean, and could he stop doing that? I knew Brady when we chased girls together 30 years ago. You know, I don't know Brady. I don't know grown up Brady. I liked Brady a lot in the 90s. Brady and I had a lot. I mean, I liked Brady a lot. So, and Brady's smart, and Brady can, you know, Brady was probably good for the family. You know, I mean, I'll say that for yeah. Lou, Brady was probably really good for the family, and not probably. I can almost say he was good for the family, right? I mean, and that's a family business member that's in your trust that was thrown out of the trust. Not we're going to recreate a role for you, but like, and that hurts some feelings, obviously. But more than that, John has usurped the franchise, right? Like we can look on the front end of that John portrays himself as it's his. And lose in the background. And that's all changed in the last 2 weeks. And that's forever changed now. And I thought the weird part of this was for a family that wanted everything to be a secret, even though I knew most of it and Peter Schmuck knows most of it. And I think deep down, probably Rock Kabako and a lot of their employees know it too and can't report it or won't report it. Things that I know about Mike Flanagan that, you know, a decade later, I have to take to my grave, right? So, I can only imagine now that all this is public that the hardest part of all of this is if mom is sentient and with it, that this is now not good for their mother. And I looked at it and thought they've been trying to keep all this secret and now it's like not a secret anymore. And I felt dirty. I mean, I was reading it on the plane and I was just, I had to get up and take a walk. And these are people that have treated me awfully. They've tried to end my career. They've tried to end my business. You're just in a lot of ways. These are people that really, really wrecked the city. And I have had no problem saying that, you know, I bought a condo to go to games and I have some gentleness and some thought for them. In some way to think, oh my God, this is just, and it's just bad for baseball. It's bad for the city. It's just bad. It's the worst of the worst. And I thought it couldn't get any worse with Peter. And now their laundry's hanging out and they're going to go to war with each other and it's screwing up the Nationals. And I just keep thinking, when's Major League Baseball just going to come in and cut these guys a check and let them go into the corner and fight it out where nobody cares and fix it? And I've been wondering that out loud for 2 decades, literally.
And you just said, and I was actually going to bring that up at some point. I mean, everything you just said from the family perspective, and look, there are families that fight over 10 grand, you know, as far as something that a family member like leaves
or
behind, something that's very modest, right? You know, family heirlooms, things of that nature. Yeah. So, you know, the millions and millions, it makes this difficult for everyday people to relate, but certainly there are people out there who can relate to family strife and conflict and things of that nature. And it is sad. And I'm not saying anyone's sitting there crying the blues or sympathizing for the Angelos family, but it's ugly and it's embarrassing. And when you have a lawsuit of this nature, true, untrue, half true, whatever the elements of it that are totally legitimate and others where you say, all right, that might be a reach. It's a very kitchen sink kind of lawsuit where, you know, I mean, this talks about John Angelos not passing the bar and Peter talking about, you know, Lou mentioning Peter's dissatisfaction about that. I mean, it's just so much dirty laundry being aired here. And, you know, you just look at it from the context of what does it mean for the city? What does it mean for the future of the Orioles? And you just said it to me, if there's any semblance of a silver lining here, because, you know, who knows how long this is going to take, you know, as much, you can talk about injunctions and trying to expedite certain elements of it, but it's going to be a legal fight, right? But in the meantime, if there's any silver lining here, is this what finally prompts Major League Baseball to get involved and say, we're done? In the same way you can talk about the courts, and you know, you talk about different situations in various sports. And even though there's not a high profile legal scandal here beyond just a lawsuit, you know, with one brother against pitting against the other and the mother, but you do wonder with this on top of the ongoing Masson litigation and, you know, the never ending feeling of that, you do wonder at some point, will this be what Major League Baseball says? Enough is enough. We're getting rid of these people. We don't want these people in our fraternity. And from that standpoint,
that was supposed to happen the minute they sued that Peter sued them. So like, you know, that's rule number one is we don't sue each other.
Right.
Like that. You're not allowed to do that. So, you know, at some point to take the franchise away and say, go over there and sue us while we run the thing. You know, they ran the thing with the Expos, right, for a couple of years. So they figured, like, so they found some way to do that. It's never been urgent for them.
Sure.
You know, the most urgent thing they can do is fight with the players. Like, literally. That is all of their energy is put into making money and fighting with the players. That is where the owners are in Major League Baseball. It's not about accommodating fans or making any experience better. It's certainly not in this city. It has nothing to do with leadership. You know, the stadium got built because politicians and business owners and leaders got together. No one gets together anymore. There's no media to cover it anymore. I'll be talking to the Banner people about that at launches. So this all does happen out in sort of the wild, wild west. But I see the stadium that you go to five nights a week on my behalf, on our behalf, on our listeners' behalf, our viewers' behalf for Baltimore Positive WNSD. And you go down there and, dude, I mean, it can't stand the way, right? I mean, they can't continue to have 3,500 people at the games, right? Like that can't go on forever. And they can't go on giving away Brooks bobbleheads forever. And like, and to your point, winning some baseball games would be good, but just,
well, let's not undersell that. That's huge. That's huge to this. Like, let's not undersell that part of it. You're still not, if you stink, you're not drawing people. I mean, you're just not. There are winning teams around baseball that aren't selling out their stadiums and they win all the time. So, I mean,
when the visiting team comes in, make people want to come and see.
Sure. Like, and
sell the thing. Sell the
right.
And let me recruit me, recruit people.
Let me be clear. I'm not disagreeing with that element. I totally agree with you, but winning is paramount. You're not recruiting people when you're losing 108 games a year. You're just not. What you're recruiting is what's showing up, their base, their diehard base that is going out there. I mean, I can tell you legitimately individual fans that I recognize out at the ballpark.
Ed Lauer's there every night, man.
You know, there's a guy on the first base side, you know, a guy who's a little bit bigger, way down the first base side, you know, probably more, you know, kind of first base / right field line down that side, close to the field. And he's got a real loud booming voice and he leads chants all the time. And it's really, you know, kind of sad, but I admire him to it, you know, in a certain way that there might only be a few thousand people there on a given night and you're hearing them. You know, those are the people that they've kept because they're the diehards. They're the diehard shrinking base that's still showing up, but you need to win. And that's where I kind of continue to go back to what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com last week in terms of, you know, on the heels of Rutschman and some of these other guys arriving and the fact that they are playing a little bit better baseball and certainly not this historically terrible outfit that we've seen for a few years now. They are better, but you're at the point now where when does that intersect, you know, as far as the young core of players they have intersecting with investing more in buying baseball players and acquiring baseball players and spending more money on your major league payroll. And now you have this, and in the same way we talked about the Masson dispute and still talk about it, you have this that is potentially bogging down, you know, deliberate or not, you know, accidental or not, you know, nefarious or not, you have this legal battle now that threatens to interfere with the process of raising your payroll. And look, I do think they'll raise payroll, but it's a matter of how much and a matter of, you know, spending and spending wisely and doing, making the right decisions. And as much as I felt better about the baseball side, I've always had my concerns about the business side and how that intersects. A lot of what you just mentioned, and this is just the latest example of being gravely concerned about that. And really, I mean, it comes down to this, you know, you keep you can keep putting out statements from John Angelos or George Angelos, or Lou Angelos can put out another statement, or you know, file more lawsuits, whatever.
Fix the team.
There are three things. There are three things right now that I want to hear in some combination: that the Angelos family is selling the team. And of course, yeah, there's unknown there, especially without a long-term lease in place. But you know, I think it's readily apparent, even those who were trying to give the benefit of the doubt and looking at the Suns coming in, and we remember the Mike Elias press conference and the Brandon Hyde press conference, and saying, okay, willing to give these guys a chance. You know, the sins of the father can't be blamed on them. But it's readily apparent to me at this point that the Orioles are not going to enter a prolonged, sustained period of success with the Angelos family owning the team. So selling the team, spending money on baseball players, which, you know, again, I'm not saying that fixes everything, but at least shows a renewed commitment that, hey, this rebuild isn't just lip service. When we said we're ready to win, we're going to go spend money and try to win. And then the other
math is so pretzel that I can't do the math anymore, right? I don't know how badly upside down these kids are and where the money is and whether they're rich or they're poor. The allegations, everybody's smart when it comes to that lawsuit. Everybody smart in my world said, follow the land money, because the usurping, the allegation of him usurping Charles Center and like all of those land projects that are very devalued right now, obviously in the real estate market downtown Baltimore, that, you know, Peter went from being a very, very rich, wealthy man and having very, very rich, wealthy kids and having a pipeline of all of this pissed off money from Masson that all came their way. And it was real. They were pocketing tons of money. Now, what happened to that money? I don't know. And the most people around the franchise that know a little bit are very concerned that they wouldn't have any money to sign players. We don't talk about Lamar Jackson and Steve Bisciotti in the terms of, can the Ravens write Lamar a $94 million check today? They can. Could the Orioles write a $75 million check right now to buy in his prime Robinson Cano, or in his prime Verlander, or in it, whatever. I'm talking $75 million, not $280 million, not Machado.
Real money, but not crazy money.
I don't know anything about those kids and mama and who's got money stuffed under their mattress and how much was leveraged and how they lived their lives and all that money that came in and what happened to it and what investments were made and where they are in the stock market. And like, but I would think the baseball team itself is really, really struggling, man. The signage, the media, Masson, the lawsuit, nobody going to the games, no concession, cities struggling, all of that. This wish that they could spend money is an old world wish when they just had $180 million in the operating account and hung out and money fell out of trees from Masson and money just... These guys have never figured out how to make money. They've never sold a sponsorship. I mean, they've never added anything new that's M&T Bank, boom. They've had it, the whole pie, and they've never done it. They don't even have stars in media. They didn't create a television show. They didn't make a network. They didn't do game shows like Nesson did and other places where they got creative. They put five guys in a dark room up in Cockeysville and talked baseball. And you know,
they don't even have that, but there's not even that anymore. I mean,
don't have revenue. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like this dream that they can buy a player. I think in 2012, they could have done that. When McPhail was around, I think if McPhail came back right now, he'd say, "What? You have no powder in the keg. You have nothing here," because I don't think they do. Maybe they do because, you know, rich kids hide money and like whatever. But I don't think the team has any solvency in that way, which is why that when Badenhausen did the report on values, that they lost value.
Yeah.
Because they're not ascending in sales and in skybox, like all of that potentiality of things they could sell. They don't sell any of it, including naming rights. Right.
Right. Right. And I mean, look, I'd say this much. I mean, we know that all the teams get revenue from Major League Baseball through, you know, your national TV deal, things of that nature. Their operating expenses have we know have been kept very low. I mean, the pandemic was a big part of that. We see how they've gutted mass, and you know, so we can go, there's money, but I'm in agreement with you. I don't know how much it is, but you know, I think that, you know, the portion of this that we haven't mentioned that I at least wanted to throw out is, you know, where they are with the lease, what that means in terms of a potential buyer, if they are to sell the team. And certainly people who know way more than I would say, you know, the absence of a lease would make the franchise more valuable, because whoever's coming in would at least say, hey, I want some better terms for this, or I might look at other markets. So you have that. And we haven't even mentioned this. Oh yeah, the Nationals are up for sale. So you have another team within this greater Baltimore, Washington area on sale to add on top of the mass and dispute and everything else we've talked about. So there are just so many layers to this. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say that I have a great handle on how this is going to play out, but that's a lot of moving parts and a lot of ugliness and a lot of uncertainty. And again, I'll continue to hold true to what I've said to you really over the last couple of years. I'm not concerned at the end of the day that the Orioles are going anywhere, but I am concerned about the Orioles, how viable and healthy and their potential to be able to succeed and to not go back to the days of 1995 where you're drawing 3.5 million people. I don't think, you know, those days aren't, that's not coming back, but tell me that there's a potential that you can draw 2.5 million people at some point in time if you've rebuilt successfully and you have people running the franchise, you know, new ownership or just people in marketing and sales and business and selling sponsorships and selling skyboxes and renovate, you know, they renovate
all
the ballpark.
All I want is my press pass back. That's all, you know, I want.
All of
that's
those.
All Maybe but park, all, a little part.
But if you can do all those things and you can maintain a degree of success, not a 5-year lightning in a bottle scenario, which was Duquette and Buck Showalter. And as fun as that was, it wasn't something that was sustainable. But if you can sustain that, and that doesn't mean you're winning the World Series every 3 years. It means you're winning more often than you're not. You're making the playoffs. Dare I say you win a World Series at some point in the next 15 or 20 years. Can the Orioles get to that point and be a franchise that is average in attendance, let's say, you know, somewhere in the middle of the pack in Major League Baseball, which you do that and you have smart people running your franchise and you treat people well and you recruit fans and you know, you've got a competitive payroll, even if it's not top 5 or top 10 in baseball. I think all those things can happen, but where they stand right now in mid-June of 2022 feels like a long way away. And even if you have some optimism on the baseball side of this, the business side still just concerns me to such a great degree. And it did even before this lawsuit, in terms of you getting to the point where you have enough young, good baseball players on your roster that, okay, go out and get some veterans to augment this thing and really become something that can win.
Bring me my JJ Hardy. Bring me my Cruz.
Sure.
Bring me my Miguel Gonzalez. You know, right? Bring me somebody.
I mean, here's the reality of it. I just looked at this the other day. According to, I forget which site, I think it was Cots Baseball Contracts, whatever it was, the average Major League Baseball payroll is right around $147 million right now. And of course, you have the Dodgers and the Mets and teams at the very top that really, you know, that are outliers. But then you also have the outliers at the bottom right now with the Orioles, with Oakland, with the fire sale that they've undergone over the last calendar year. But the reality is, you know, the $150 million payroll, which is where the Orioles were kind of at their peak payroll level with Dan Duquette running the show. And we know so much of that was they weren't, you know, it was a shoestring budget as far as minor leagues, analytics, player development, all those different things. So everything was pumped into the major league payroll at that point in time. But the reality is that's about average in Major League Baseball now. So everything you mentioned as far as the concerns,
I don't know that they could afford that.
And that's where
I have to do the math on what they're really getting from the league, because they're not getting much locally. That's my point. My point is locally, they can't be a heartbeat above where Oakland is or Tampa or any of these moribund places where they just literally have paupered their way into being a small market franchise. I remember we used to fight that fight. Luke, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. And Adley Rutschman's home run as well. Luke will be at Camden Yards doing his thing. There ain't no more Owens Mills for a few weeks, although we have plenty to say about Lamar Jackson. We'll continue to talk about that as well. I'm doing Maryland Crab Cake tours all over the place, all over the city, starting at Sláinte. Sometimes you need an Irish bar to mend your spirits after such a loss for the community. The World Cup thing's done, and I'm bummed. I'm going to do a little requiem for all of that with every Marty Conway and every Dave Johnson and every broken heart Steve Goff, and I'll probably find Grant Wall and all those folks as well. So we'll be doing that. We're with the mayor on Monday at Next Face Cafe. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is presented by the Maryland Lottery, and I got some Betty Boop scratch off tickets. I got a handful of these left, and then after these are gone, I'm on to the new scratch off. So we'll be doing that at Next Phase on Monday with the mayor. Also on Wednesday, we're going to be at Fadley's in Lexington Market, talking to politics, talking about the election. Please have a plan to vote. Make sure you're doing that. As we get up on the summer here, we'll be talking more and more about that. By the way, Luke, I know I gave you a shout out from Amsterdam. The Pennsylvania thing, you got your own thing going on up there. I want to make sure I give a shout out and let everybody know that Dr. Oz doesn't even live in Pennsylvania. But more than that, the Penn State thing, dude, I'm on the Herengrat and I see a little VW buggy with a Penn State. I look down and I'm like, I can't, and it said on there, if you zoomed in, they were a member of the Penn State Curling Club.
Oh, that's fun. See, that's really funny that it's not, you think, okay, Penn State grad, big football fan. They just moved across the pond. No big deal. Curling. That's great.
Curling. Yeah, absolutely. Crazy Dutch bastards. He is Luke at Baltimore. Luke is the way to find him. And Luke at WNST.net. You can always find me, Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Twitter, all those places, trying to speak truth to power. As always, 31 years in. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking as the Orioles turn.